On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
And it took you a while to get to the number one job at the Herald Sun.
A few fell off the perch.
I don't understand that.
Racing New South Wales or the ATC can just move a stakes race.
The media is just as much to blame, trying to sensationalise issues.
Racing ministers come and racing ministers go, though.
They don't drink, they don't smoke. It's not like 20 years ago when they pulled them out of an orphanage or jail.
You know, it's like motor racing or mountaineering.
I mean, I know I'm being devil's advocate.
Of course you are.
He said he had a brain fade, he was buggered. Welcome to The Verdict, and this week it's great to have Jason Richardson back in the chair for Matty Stewart, who is overseas. I think he's in Cambodia somewhere, so there's a fair chance he may not come back, Richo. You might be here permanently.
Wowee. Great to be with you, and good luck to Matty. I'm sure he's having a wonderful time. Dean Elliott was superb last week, so there's some massive shoes to fill from our next guest as well.
Oh, and I tell you what, we were going to get Mick Lynch, but we couldn't get him, so we've decided we've got Usain Bolt.
Charas, it's all right. Anna is here now, and I is looking forward to backing an horse at the weekend.
We've only just found out that Mick Lynch can do the best Rastafarian accent I've ever heard. How are you, Mick?
I'm fine, thank you. But it's a legacy of my days as a kid at school in London when I used to take Wednesday afternoons off, and it was the pre-digital era and all the bookies used to have chalkboards, and I used to mark the board when I was about 16 or 17. And some of the shops I worked in were full of, shall we say, old Jamaican lads, old Rastafarians who would roll their own back Leicester pig at whatever he rode and have a kind of red stripe while they were there. So you do pick a little bit of it up, yeah.
He's nailed that.
That is outstanding. That's just gone to the top of my highlights of the weekend. That has. What a great weekend, Richo. It seems like a little while ago now that we're talking about it because of the Monday holiday, but what was your highlight? Was it Darren Beeman?
Oh, I had to be. I mean, impending... Never forget that it was a handicap, the Stradbroke. And so many people were talking, you know, about the Doomben 10,000 and the Kingsford Smith Cup as the key form reference. But impending, dropped down in the weights and got on that different track. Because that Eagle Farm track, we saw time and time again, race after race, where horses were beaten 10 up to 20 lengths at Eagle Farm, turning their form around on a firmer deck at Doomben. But impending had the double whammy, firmer deck, but also down in the weights. Great ride by Corey Brown. And I was just so pleased for Darren Beeman of 80 to 90 Group 1s as a jockey, Australian Hall of Fame, one of the all-time greats, but also one of the all-time great human beings. For him to have a Group 1 next to his name as a trainer, we know that he's controlling this juggernaut, this huge operation that is Godolphin, but still, he is the trainer at the moment. And the fact that he only had a couple of opportunities before James Cummings took over the mantle. I just thought it was wonderful for him to have a Group 1 next to his name. Whether he goes on and is a trainer in his own right in future years, I don't know. But I was just so pleased for Darren Beeman, the person.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic achievement. He's only been in there a short time. He vacates on August the 1st. Joins a very elite group, as we were discussing off air, weren't we? Australian jockeys have ridden Group 1 winners. Ronnie Quinton, Pat Hyland were two we came up with quite quickly. Lance O'Sullivan, Scobie Breasley in Europe a long time ago.
But yeah, there will be racing historians out there. Text us.
Yeah, let us know.
0416905052 for any that we've missed or can't think of off the top of our heads, because there would be more out there, but it's a select group.
Yeah, it is. And more power to Darren Beeman's elbow and a great achievement for him.
And for the son of Lonro to win a Group 1 in impending, who Darren Beeman rode Lonro, out of Nemezen, who Darren Beeman rode to win a Group 1 as well, to be the horse that produced his first Group 1 as a trainer. I mean, it's just fantastic.
We'll talk about the Stradbroke in more depth in a couple of moments, but you sound very bubbly about that race. Did you have a little financial windfall?
Well, I had a small investment, and I declared my selection on the Seven Network. Thanks for watching,
your
Mickey Blue.
It was Queensland. We don't get it, Danny.
Yes, it was.
I didn't see
it. It was national.
The VFL was on Channel 7 down here.
7 would have slipped over to Mate.
Oh, right, yeah.
We have more than one station.
Channels of 7.
Don't forget who employs you.
This is going to be an internecine punch-up here, isn't it?
Know that Richard, when he flies, a small wager is not what a normal person's small wager would be. Hey, we're going to talk about that a little later.
Hey.
What were your thoughts about yesterday? A lot of talkback on Twitter when we put out last night, what do you want to discuss? Overwhelming, the number one topic was public holiday in Melbourne. Why were we racing at Mornington, not at a metropolitan track?
Two aspects here, Mick, and I know you've spoken about this, about swimming against the tide.
Yeah.
The football codes have totally and utterly dominated the sporting landscape in Australia to the point where you just can't fight them. Collingwood versus Melbourne, Freeze MND, it's a cause that's close to my heart with having lost two friends and about to lose another one who's battling this horrendous disease. That's all I was interested in. To be honest, I thought about the races and saw it was Mornington, and I hate to say this, said, turn aside, flip the page, and didn't even think about it for the day.
I agree with you. I would normally flick between the footy and that, but at the end of the day, I was like, you know what, I'll keep across the results, but I just was focused on the racing. If we'd been racing in town and we had, you know, a more Saturday equivalent meeting, I would have been in between both of them.
You focused on the footy.
I focus on weekends, but
yesterday it was
lackluster.
It was a provincial card dressed up as a metro card, wasn't it? Really, I mean, Mornington on the Monday of Queen's birthday. I mean, when I first came here, the long time ago, didn't we used to have a Flemington meeting on Queen's birthday? There was a 2-day meeting on the Saturday and the Monday.
I think we did. Well, and I think the Brisbane Cup used to be on Queen's
Birthday. And the
Brisbane
Cup.
Well, they didn't have one meeting in Brisbane yesterday because they don't celebrate the Queen's Birthday holiday.
And they had
holiday.
Nine on Saturday there.
Did we assume it was at Mornington because Caulfield would have had that day and vacated it, and the MRC just wanted to keep the date and ran it at Mornington?
And is it appropriate to have a metropolitan meeting at Mornington?
Well, it certainly was historically, but as you say, the landscape's changed greatly now. Aussie rules football in particular has kind of come to be the behemoth that dominates public space on these big days. It's a debate worth having. I mean, Boxing Day, again, the test match at the MCG, it's one of the great, red circle the date in your diary occasions in Melbourne society. So, you know, we run a Caulfield meeting then, don't we, on Boxing Day?
But Caulfield's different.
Yeah, it's different
to Mornington.
Because it's
a metropolitan racetrack. It's very different to Mornington. I know Mornington, that race meeting on AFL Grand Final Day has been popular, but once again, they've moved back away from that.
You see, I thought that was good.
I liked
the more, and they had the Hariba Stakes, didn't they? They had some good races on that day, didn't they?
No, they had the Harry White Classic.
Oh, right, yeah. But you know, I used to actually enjoy that because if the footy was one-sided grand final, I'd certainly be flicking on to the races at Mornington and what have you on grand final day.
Because it's Epsom Day, of course, in Sydney.
And it's a great day in Sydney as well, yeah.
Well, let's have a chat to Paul Bloodworth, who is the manager of racing operations at Racing Victoria, the man who is probably responsible for slotting in these meetings and where they go. Good morning, Paul. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks, Michael. And yes, I am the man responsible for this mess that you guys have just been talking about for the last 10 minutes.
Well, I didn't call it a mess, but I just wonder whether it would be better to have a metropolitan meeting in Melbourne at a metropolitan track. Can you tell us the reason why it's at Mornington?
Oh, look, it's probably a little bit of a long story. And I think listening to your conversation for the last few minutes, I think you've sort of summed it up pretty well. We do run across the year, feature meetings on Boxing Day, Anzac Day, New Year's Day and Australia Day at Caulfield and Flemington. I guess the Monday public holidays, I think as was discussed, they used to have a really strong focus years ago. And I think it was Michael who said it used to be a 2-day Flemington meeting. That's correct. The provincial plate used to be the feature of the Monday. But I've been at RV for 10 years and it hasn't been run at Flemington for over 10 years. It's always been at Mornington in my time here. We used to run on the March long weekend. We used to run the Australian Cup on the Monday, and that was condensed into Super Saturday. And we also used to run at Caulfield on the Easter long weekend on the Monday, where the Easter Cup used to be run. And now that's being condensed into the one day on the Monday. And I think if you look across Australia, I think it was also mentioned about the June long weekend. It used to be the Brisbane Cup at Eagle Farm. They've moved away from that and condensed it into the one day. The Metrop used to be on the Monday, the October long weekend, and in Sydney also on Easter, the Monday used to have a feature meeting. None of those days have a feature meeting. I think the only state that has a feature day on a Monday long weekend now is the SAJC, and they have the Adelaide Cup in March. So, look, it could have been a... I mean, look, the VRC already run two meetings in June, so it's unlikely that they'd want to move away and run another meeting on the Monday. And I think one of the main reasons is that these days have become condensed is that people just simply stop going to them. And it could be, as you guys discussed, the focus on football. It could just be people, you know, tend to go away more on the long weekends now than they may have used to and don't have time to go to the races on the Monday. It could be a variety of reasons, but the reality of it, people stop going. So it could have been a Sandown meeting, like we are racing at Sandown on Wednesday. We could flick those. Whether or not that would make a great deal of difference to people's interest levels on the Monday, I'm not sure. Looking at the wagering figures from last year, they were pretty similar on the Monday and the Wednesday when we raced at Sandown. So not a lot of wagering growth to be found. So it's probably a long answer to a short question. There's no simple answer to that solution, unfortunately.
So why couldn't it have been a Caulfield meeting? Just because you say there's not enough people turn up?
Oh, not really. I mean, the clubs have been pretty clear that, like the MRC, we tried going back to the Monday of the Easter long weekend at Caulfield a couple of years ago, and it didn't work for the club, and they requested that we move it away from them again. That's now at Sandown, that meeting. Look, Caulfield have a little mini breakthrough this period. They have a very busy period through sort of April and early May, and then they have a four or five-week break into their meetings in July. You know, they also have exams being run at Caulfield through this period where it is certain times of this period they're not available to race. But, I mean, look, there's no real reason that the MRC couldn't run it at Caulfield if they changed their structure a little bit, didn't do a little renovation.
Decent exams out at Sandown. There's plenty of room out there.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, it is a commercial agreement that the MRC have, so that would be a matter for them to advise us on. But, yeah, I mean, it would, from a wagering sense, I think there'd be a little bit of growth in having replacing a Caulfield meeting to a Mornings meeting. I don't think it'd be exponential. But I think, as Richo said, the focus really is on the Melbourne Collingwood game yesterday and the great charity that's attached to that.
Well, you could combine it though, Richard, don't you think? You could have it on the big screen at a city venue. You can have your fundraising. Racing could get on the back of it, and you could have your own ice pool out at the races.
Racing could try to get included in it.
That's it. That's
right, piggyback yeah. on exactly. this juggernaut that is the AFL yeah. and actually try to... But the reality is, unless you have it in a city venue, it'll have limited interest for anyone off course.
That's right.
And that's the brutal reality, isn't it, Paul?
Oh, look, absolutely, no doubt. I agree with that Caulfield would have a greater focus than somewhere like Mornington. There's no doubt about that. I mean, Mornington does run several metro meetings through the year. They sort of punch above their weight a little bit from a wagering perspective, but of course Caulfield would have a greater focus. But, I mean, I don't think we'd be running feature races on the day. There was never really any strong feature races on the Monday. I mean, the provincial plate was mainly for country horses. So I guess it just would depend on whether or not that would grab the attention of, I guess, the general public and whether you could link to things like that. It is a discussion we do have every year with the Metropolitan Racing Clubs. I mean, the VRC are very strong that they predominantly want to run Saturdays. I mean, it would make more sense for it to be their go back to them rather than Caulfield, given Caulfield have never run this meeting.
Paul, could I just ask you one thing? You're still very involved with jumps racing, aren't you?
I certainly am.
We put this out for debate last night, and I had one respondent saying, why don't we take the Monday meeting when there's almost little interest and footy is focused on it? Why don't we actually make it a kind of featured jumps racing day, either at Sandown or more pertinently maybe at Ballarat or Bendigo, load it up with good jumps races and make it a focal point and a real point of difference from footy, and particularly for people, say, who live in the regions? I mean, is that an idea worth pursuing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are in a little bit of a break for feature races in Victoria up until the Lafferty and Thackeray meeting on the 9th of July. So we ran the Australian Hurdle and Steeplechase on the 27th of May, and then we have a sort of 5 or 6 week break into those races. So it would require a pretty significant revamp of the calendar for jumps racing, which we've sort of established now over the last couple of years. But we do actually have jumps races this Thursday at Ballarat. So, yeah, that's certainly an idea. I mean, if you're looking to reinvigorate those Mondays, I guess there's a range of opportunities that you could look at, whether that be a metropolitan presence or you just focus completely on the country and change it up a little bit and put jumps races on as the focus on the day.
So it's going to be held again next Monday at Mornington. Have those dates already been released?
Yes, they have. Yep. So next year, you mean, Michael? So
yeah, next year.
Next year at Mornington again. Yep, that's right. And like one of the other things that I didn't mention is I think the costs are higher for the clubs on those days as well.
There's been
a bit of a reluctance to open their big venues on those days as well. So, look, I mean, there's a variety of reasons. It's a very similar structure to the dates next year around those Mondays, but we, as I said earlier, we sort of still got our feature days on Boxing Day, Anzac Day, New Year's Day and Australia Day, where we've got, you know, Flemington Corporate.
Just quickly before I let you go, I just got a tweet from Matthew Christie. If yesterday's Mornington meeting was a City meeting, why wasn't the prize money matched? Was the prize money yesterday of City midweek City meeting standard?
Yep, definitely. Yep. So it had the structure of $40,000 races for anything over a benchmark 64. Benchmark 64 is with 35 and maidens 27, which is the same structure you'll see at Sandown on Wednesday.
Paul, appreciate you coming on and just clarifying the reasons why it was at Mornington yesterday.
No worries, guys. Cheers.
Paul Bloodworth there. You can understand what the argument is, but it doesn't help anyone. And, you know, I mean, we just were talking amongst ourselves for 30 seconds there, and it's all about the Freeze MND. Like, why couldn't you, as you said, get involved?
I like Lynch's idea of actually celebrating jumps racing, and let's tweak the calendar to make sure that Queen's Birthday Monday is a feature jumps meeting. Even to the point of five or six races, if we can get enough horses who are willing to compete in it. But then not only that, chat to the team at Freeze MND and have a simulcast with a whole lot of racing people going down their own slide at Mornington or Ballarat, and let's actually get in right, combine with them.
Great
and get
idea,
involved.
Richard. I mean, look, firstly, I can't take credit for that suggestion. I must give it to the man who sent me the text, Andrew Brown, on Twitter last night. But your suggestion was terrific there, because if you can't beat it, join it in a way. And there's a lot of footy people who like racing, involved with racing. Why couldn't you?
Racing needs to dovetail as much as it can off the AFL. Because
and you've got the networks.
And we've got the greatest asset going around at the moment that we don't tap into, and that the CEO of the AFL is a passionate racing man in Gil McLaughlin. So grab him. Grab him in a headlock and say, how can we get our sport back in the headlines this time of the year? Can we use your sport to come and just jump on?
And when it's a charity, Neil Danner would open his arms up. If it's more chance of raising more money for research, there'd be no holding back.
And the Dannerhers love racing too.
And it's on Channel 7, which covers the racing. 100%. So there could be crossover for coverage as well. All right, we've solved that one.
Right, plenty more. Next!
Plenty more coming up.
What's
on the verdict.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Jason Richardson and Michael Lynch from The Age in the studio. Gents, quickly, let's just go back to Doomben, because I want to talk about the group ones up there. Ruthven, how dominant was he? And is he a genuine Caulfield Cup chance, in your opinion?
So hard to say, isn't it? Who did he beat? Well, Rockstar Rebel, I think, is a really progressive stayer. Whether he'd be at that level, he makes too many mistakes at the moment. Tell you who doesn't make mistakes, and that is Hugh Bowman. And that's why you put him on, because we've spoken about this on this program time and time again. He makes the right decision. He went forward, then got out of the speed battle, and then at one stage, about 1,000 metres out, he had fresh air in front, behind and beside. It was the perfect scenario that allowed him the opportunity to blend into the race when he wanted to. But the horse had other ideas, said, look, I am going two to their one. He hit the front so far out, a lot further out than Huey wanted to, but he was just so much better than him, wasn't it? 2,200 metres, though, keep in mind. So a horse like Volatile Mix, you know, he finished off nicely, but he's a horse that
wasn't
needed 24, 25, wasn't his track. It's a tight little track there. Ruthven's got the ability to sit right there on speed. He ticks a lot of boxes around Doomben, whether he's going to be up to being at the level of a Caulfield Cup. I think the Caulfield Cup's changed a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah, so, do you think the three-year-olds coming into their four-year-old year, we saw Mongolian Khan do it a couple of years ago, but it's a lot harder now with the internationals coming out?
It's just impossible to predict so far out. That's why the markets that we just heard there, I mean, I think they should add a 50 to every one of the prices. So if Red Cardinal's $12, to be fair,
60.
He's a $62 chance because he's a 50-1 chance to actually get there on the race day.
Quinny did give us 100 Kilimanjaro when he looked up his 35. So that was a nice twist of the board for us.
We've got a little bit of overs there. Now that's fair and reasonable because he's a 50-1 chance to be there.
One thing you can say about Ruthven, he's tough as teak, he gets the trip, and he will have, because he's run very well in the longer distance of the South Australian and the Australian derbies, and he has a trainer who knows how to prepare a horse to win.
And he's in the race.
Cup, and he'll get in the race. The big issue, as Richo and you, Michael, have just touched on, it's the same question every year. What are the three-year-olds beating? I mean, they're beating their own age group, and we really don't know for at least another 6 to 9 months whether that age group is actually any good. We get a fair idea in the sprint divisions because they take each the older horses on early on, but these middle-distance horses, it won't really be until this time next year nearly whether we know if the stayers are any good.
Well, John Snow beat him easily in the ATC Derby, which was a wet track. Who would you rather be on now heading into the spring, John Snow or Ruthven?
God, that's a tough one, isn't it? Probably John Snow. But then don't forget Ginger Nuts.
Yeah.
He's in that mix as well.
John Snow was a much more experienced horse. I think it was his 12th start when he won the AJC Derby, or 11th start.
And what was Ruthven's?
Well, Ruthven, I don't think he'd had as much racing. John Snow,
he's had nine starts now.
He's had nine starts now, so he'd have only had about five then. John Snow was a confirmed mudlark, wasn't he? And that was a pretty heavy track.
But then also the balance is that they were saying, you know, pre-race, that we're concerned that he's had too much racing Murray Baker and Andrew Forsman, that he might be over the top. So he's been able to do it at the end of a long prep. So that's a tick.
Do we think that the shorter distance helped Ruthven or hindered him? I mean, maybe given his...
I don't think it would have been any difference in the result if it was an extra 200.
It certainly might have hindered Anna Royale, who she seems to be the better, the further she goes, the better she goes.
He hindered Volatile Mix.
And Volatile Mix, I mean, he was a horse who wasn't really on the radar until about April, was he?
Yeah.
Until he got a proper long trip to run over. So he would have been much better. Interestingly, I note the horse that ran fourth was the Violate, the one at the centre of the whip controversy other
Brent
day.
Brent Stanley's.
Up in Queensland. Has that been resolved?
No.
It's kind of gone quiet, hasn't it?
Still waiting
on that one. I don't know how much.
Violate, you get obviously a lot of form references there. Ran fourth in the Rough Habit and also third in the Grand Prix. So he's been in and around, consistent time and time again. He's around the mix.
But so what I take it, Richo, out of the Derby, you're really only interested in maybe Ruthven and Volatile Mix moving forward. That could maybe make that progression.
I think all the horses will find different grades. I think Rockstar Rebel is the one that the penny still hasn't dropped. It took Weary a long time to get him fit. He won a benchmark 70 against the older horses at Ballarat in the lead-up run to the Queensland Derby. I had something on him each way in the Queensland Derby just because I thought he was a horse on the up. So it's taken a long, long time. I know some of the punters out there would be going, oh, I'll never forgive him for getting beaten at $1.50 or something at Bendigo. He does a lot wrong, but he is one that's on the up. What level he can get to, I don't know.
JJ Atkins, it's the same question. What level will these two-year-olds get to? And how did you rate that race?
I think Aloysius should have won.
Yeah, no doubt.
She was held up top of the straight. And so Kieran Maher has done he's had a huge day, hasn't he? Because he's also ended up Pemberley's run third in the Brisbane Cup. So, but, you know, isn't that fantastic? Paul Butterworth joins Group 1 Trainers Club. He was the strapper for Viewed in a Melbourne Cup, Lynchy. So, but... The legacy of Bart just keeps coming on through.
It was all Bart.
It's all Bart. When in doubt.
It's the Cummings DNA. It just percolates through everything. I think everyone's worked for him now at some point, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly right. But, I mean, that was a great story because the owners, they kept their nerve. I spoke to Paul Butterworth yesterday and he said, look, reports of 700,000 and him telling them don't sell were not quite right. He said, look, 700,000 is a lot of money. You make up your own mind. But they said, no, we're going to stick with you. Now they've got a Group 1 3-year-old.
Interesting. Now I'd sell.
Well, he's had the operation though, hasn't he?
That's why he's been better for Hong Kong. That's the request because it's from Hong Kong.
He said that they're going to miss majority of the Melbourne Spring.
Sell.
Yep. Caulfield Guineas maybe, and then look towards Sydney.
Sell. It is hard to earn $700,000 on the racetrack. There'll be people out there listening going, oh, but it's the great thrill of owning a horse, and I can see that.
You're a mercenary.
No, but it's just hard to earn $700,000 on a racetrack. think about how many really good races you need to win.
But if you are a three-year-old gelding, you stay sound, you're a Group 1, Group 2 type performer, which you'd hope a horse like this will go on to, might be able to run for three, four, five seasons. Who knows?
You still need to win a lot of good races.
Or you need to go out in the paddock tomorrow and get bitten by a snake.
It's going to cost you 30 per annum to be trained. You look at races like the CFO Stakes and the Futurity, all these Group 1 races, they're in total prize money of $500,000.
Yeah, and they always say, don't they, that every horse has his price. Maybe they just haven't offered sufficient yet.
Well, they've got good luck to them. It's fantastic.
They've got their Group 1 now. And just touching again on the Stradbroke, we mentioned the winner. What do you make of Clearly Innocent? If it was at Eagle Farm, would it have been a different result?
I think the reality is, in the last 30 years, there's only been two horses that have been able to carry 57 kilos or above to win the Stradbroke, and they are Rough Habit and Campaign King. As good as Clearly Innocent is, he's not in that ballpark.
No.
And the reality is, he ran really well on a track that probably didn't suit him, but affirmed. Look, he wasn't severely disadvantaged, but the reality is he went back to a handicap. And we saw it in the Melbourne Cup when people were trying to find the winner. Almandon got through by winning the Bart Cummings. Therefore, he got in at the lightweight. It's a handicap, and the best handicapped horse won the race.
He certainly did, 52.5, you know, and Corey Brown, a terrific jockey, you can ride that way, you know. I mean, makes a big difference. We've touched on the Biedman factor. Terrific run, though, by In Her Time. I mean, she was trying
huge.
To give a kilo to the winner, and Dean Yendall went up and rode that, didn't he? And, you know, only beaten less than half a length, so that was an excellent effort
she was
as
home.
Well.
She was home.
Yeah.
Maybe in a couple of weeks for Tats.
Oh, just take a power. So that's the last of our Group 1s. And what have we got? Waller on 9 and Weir on 8. So the battle to see who's going to be the supreme.
Weir
what will Weir have?
I don't think he'd have anything.
He won't have a mare?
Well, he wouldn't surely not put Canedna in there, would he?
No.
He's run her everywhere else.
It's because it's back to 1350.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's at 1350. So. And I don't know if CJ Waller, surely he'll have
something. French emotion and these sorts of...
Well, she ran again in Queensland and once again...
It was a quiet little run.
But I'm not convinced she goes as well the other way around. I think she tends to go the best Melbourne way of going.
Yep. Out of the Stradbroke, was it a notch below this year? Were you disappointed overall with the field?
Well, I think impending... Keep in mind that Godolphin have always had impending right there with Astern in their assessment as a young horse. They rated him really highly. I mean, he's got form through Caulfield Guineas and Gold Rose.
He ran favourite, didn't he, in the Caulfield Guineas?
So I wouldn't be dismissing him as a quality animal. And he got in at lightweight. So if you've got a three-year-old colt in with a lightweight, I mean, not many three-year-old colts have been able to win the race. I wouldn't be dismissing it.
I wouldn't dismiss him, but I think I get what Michael's saying. At the top of the weights, if it's Clearly Innocent, it's not, you know, we've had some real kind of cracking horses, Blackheart Bart and horses like that, carrying top weight in a Stradbroke. At this stage, you wouldn't put Clearly Innocent in that ballpark, would you?
I don't underestimate Clearly Innocent. I think Counterattack running fourth gives you the perfect benchmark, doesn't it? Because Counterattack's always in and around. Mm. He's a legitimate
retired. He never got his Group 1.
No. Beautifully bred, though. So a son of Redoute's Choice will go to Kitchwin Hills.
He's gone there getting 2.5 off Clearly Innocent. What would he be getting off Blackheart Bart?
Probably an extra another couple of kilos, wouldn't you? You'd think so.
I think that's kind of benchmark. Where Clearly Innocent may well go on and become a lot better. Who knows? But that's where it is, I think, at the moment.
What did you take out of Flemington? Matt Hill had his greatest moment so far when he said Kilimanjaro's got a mountain to climb.
Yeah, yeah.
Gee, it was a great run.
It was a huge run, wasn't it? I mean, this is a horse who ran... last time he went to the races, keep this in mind, was in June 2015, Lynchy.
You went here, Lynchy, back then.
It was
behind Jack Hobbs, who's won Group 1 since.
Yeah, it was the Irish Derby. In fact, he finished a neck in front of Highland Reel on that occasion.
Let's be frank. He's a proper horse. How does he get into the race at a winnable weight? That's going to be the key for him.
What weight would he get?
Well, he'll be in the race with enough. Well, he had. What would what?
Well,
what
I've just looked up. I've just looked up the form here. Say from his last start, the Irish Derby. He's run fourth behind Jack Hobbs. Storm the Stars, who was a horse who came out here and did disappoint when he was with Chris Waller, and Giovanni Canaletto, whom no one's heard of other than in an art gallery since. But but I think Kilimanjaro ran to a BHA rating of about 104, 105 on that occasion, which they tend to be, you know, maybe about sort of 10 points higher than what we get here. So I don't know, what rating did he run off on Saturday?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. I don't
know.
You've
got the form guide there.
Yeah, we had 60 kilos. There's a benchmark 90. So what's the calculations there?
He would have been about 90. So, he would have been. He was top weight. So,
and he ran sixth in an Epsom Derby behind Golden Horn.
Golden Horn, yeah. He was beaten a fair distance.
But do you think he can make the progression after having two and a bit years out to have the little cameo appearance and come back and be a genuine Melbourne Cup winning chance?
You wouldn't underestimate from that stable. That's the reality, because that they will get them fit and give them every opportunity.
I think that's the point. Essentially, Al Mandin had a year and a half, 2 years out, didn't he? And broke down and was nursed back up at Macedon and came back and showed what he could do. You wouldn't put it past them. If he gets there, you know he's going to be sound, fit and ready to go if he's there in the field.
And last year's Emirates Melbourne Cup showed one thing, and it showed the new pathway of the way to get into the Melbourne Cup at a winnable rate, and that is to win the Bart Cummings.
Yep. Now, and that's the race now that Lloyd focuses on.
Well, so should everyone, though. Mm. Everyone who has a horse here should be focusing on that race. Keep in mind, last year, it was a soft race.
It was,
they couldn't have believed how soft it was. And then you got a free ticket straight in and you can't get a penalty. Bang.
And you get a month to freshen up and have a 10 days off and then bang, step up the work and be there. Absolutely cherry fit. Cherry ripe, can't you?
That's going to be the race.
The Bart Cummings will be the Melbourne Cup determining race. Outside of Kilimanjaro, who else caught your eye at Flemington over the weekend, gents?
So Royal Order also won. Gee, that Tasmanian's good, isn't it?
Shahitzi, he was just phenomenal.
He's a beauty.
Brendan McCall's first winner at Flemington. I couldn't believe that.
Well, you've followed a lot of Tasmanian racing, and so have I. He's been a beauty down in Tassie for such a long time. Didn't he travel into the race exactly like he did in the Echuca Cup? He was going to win that race a long, long way out. That doesn't help us for those that backed it when it ran ninth at Flemington, when poor old Boris Thornton never got a shot at them the entire length of the straight. So I thought that was sensational. That was a big win, Lynchy.
Yeah, well, certainly was, and I always like these cards at this time of the year. They may not have star horses, but they have big fields and they're competitive racing. But I guess the one who would have caught most people's eyes, because he didn't win again, Goatland.
He was poor, wasn't he?
I don't think he'll be starting odds on anytime soon again.
They're erecting a statue for him, aren't they?
We've decided to see other people.
Some say that it shouldn't be a silent T.
What's that?
It shouldn't be a silent T.
That's right. Well, we've had a lot of correspondence on how to actually pronounce that horse's name. But
we've got correspondence coming through now. Morning, team. Great discussion. Clearly, RVL had given listening to the blokes you had on. Okay. Why should racing give way to the football? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. People won't turn up, so why try to encourage them? That's from Mick at Woodend. Well, that's a bit defeatist, Mick, isn't it?
Well, no, he's taking up my point, saying that you can't swim against the tide, so therefore you've got to blend in with them. You've got to make sure that you incorporate and try to find a way of piggybacking on the back of this juggernaut, especially in this town.
Do you know what I used to love back in the day going to the football as a young kid, when they'd put the race results up on the big screen?
Couldn't agree with you more.
Why doesn't that happen anymore?
I don't know.
Because that big screen's worth so much money that we're not paying. You'd have to pay for that privilege.
And it'd be lovely at half time just to chuck in a couple of legs that have been run for the punters there to see.
You'd have to pay for that privilege. But that's a privilege that we should be paying for. Not only that, we should be paying for it like we did a couple of years ago, and that is especially towards the end of the footy season, that there should be a summary coming up for any night game at the AFL of this is what happened at Caulfield today, where the Memsie Stakes worth $1 million was run, and this horse won, and this horse that.
100%.
A quick 2-minute highlights package played at halftime or played before the game on 100%. Every night game during the
And you could get Jack Riewoldt involved with his tip or something like that. You could get Mark Murphy involved, the footballers who love their
racing.
Money. We've got plenty of money racing.
Well, let's spend it, Mickey Blue.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Verdict.
Costing us so much money.
Back after this.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Well, it may not have been the biggest race over the weekend, but it might have had the most feeling, and that was the race that Monstar won at Randwick, and it was ridden by former champion apprentice Josh Adams, who has been to the depths and he's fought his way back, and he joins us this morning on The Verdict. Good morning, Josh. Congratulations. That must have been a day you'll never forget on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks. It was pretty special.
Josh, for the listeners who aren't aware, the battles that you've been through, you spent a number of years on the sidelines after testing positive to illicit substances, and you had a battle with ice. How tough was that to overcome, and how long did that really grip you?
Something that probably was a bit progressive over a number of years, probably 3 or 4 years on and off. It was very tough to overcome, and something that I'd never like to see anyone else go through, or never wish it upon anyone. But it's one of those things that I think when you're growing up, just in this day and age, it's getting more and more prominent, and it sort of gets hold of a lot of young people, and unfortunately I was one of them.
And Josh, you're able to make your way through it, though. Have you totally beaten it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I've been clean for a long time now, well and truly over 12 months, or nearly 2 years, actually. And it's something that I've learned a lot from the experiences that I've been through and having time off. But I'm just glad that I'm sort of on the other side of it.
And Josh, it is an addiction that we've seen right at the forefront of so much media at the moment. How do you beat this addiction to this drug that is just horrendous?
Yeah, look, it's a terrible thing. It gets hold of a lot of people without them maybe knowing that it has or that it's going to, and I think it's sort of like anything, starts out and you don't think it's a problem and you think you've got control, and then as soon as you think you've got control, it's when you really haven't. So I think it sort of creeps up on young people especially.
Josh, we've seen it in all walks of life and in other sporting arenas as well, not just ice but other illicit substances. You've been through it from the racing perspective. Is there more of it out there in the world of racing that we don't know about or that is reported? And is there maybe an underlying issue as well in some aspects of the racing industry?
Oh, I don't think racing is any different to probably any other industry, to be honest. I think it's probably more prominent than what comes to the surface in life in general. People that you wouldn't expect to have a problem. I think we've seen it with a lot of other, I think it sort of see it with sports people because they're so much more in the media, and you look at a lot of sports people that have had issues with illicit substances and just substance abuse in general. I think that sort of comes to the forefront because you hear about it, but in every industry I think there's probably bits and pieces of issues there everywhere.
Josh, it's Michael Lynch here. Just quickly now, you've battled for 2 years. Did you have a lot of support from within the racing industry, from within Racing New South Wales? Have trainers and owners been supportive of you and welcomed you back? Or has it been a bit of a battle to firstly get over it and secondly to convince people that, you know, it's worth putting you up, that you're not going to relapse, that sort of thing?
Well, when I was off, one trainer in particular, a very, very good mate of mine, Grant Allard, he was very supportive of me, and we became very close mates in the time I was off. And I moved up and lived with Grant for a long time, and sort of moved up to Gosford where I live now, and sort of re-established myself there. And he was definitely my number one supporter when I first came back. When I first started riding again, I didn't think I'd particularly get many rides, or I thought everyone would be a little bit probably hesitant or reserved to put me on and to see sort of where I was at first. But gradually I think I'm getting a little bit more support and I'm earning people's trust back, and I think that's probably now people are sort of starting to see that I'm working quite hard and doing my best and keeping my nose clean.
Considering where you've come from, Josh, take us through the emotions there on Saturday, about 600 metres out from the race, when you started to believe you're going to be hard to catch.
Yeah, I tried not to think about it leading up to the race. You know, I thought the horse was a really good chance, but you know, I'm not one. The fairy tale never seems to come off. You know, you always hope it does, and you run a nice horse. But sort of travelled up in the race, going okay, and wasn't until I sort of topped the rise that I thought, oh, I'm going all right here, because the rest of the field, there's only one horse that had more weight than me, and the rest of the field all had 53, and I thought, there's got to be something coming at me late with no weight on its back. So I topped the rise, I thought, give him a squeeze, I thought I was going all right, and I looked up at the big screen, about 150 metres out, and I couldn't believe how far in front he was. It was a really, really good feeling.
And you got the privilege, because you were so far in front, you were able to sit up and pose for the photo and have a little wave of the whip. But that's cost you as well, hasn't it?
Yeah. I promised myself leading into the race, I'm like, if this horse wins, I'm not going to salute. Nah, I'm just going to be cool. And then when I looked up at the big screen, I saw how far in front I was. I couldn't contain myself and end up costing me 200. But, you know, it's worth it.
200, you're not a worry in the world. There'd be a lot of people driving along at the moment going, hang on, I've seen that vision used in marketing for the sport time and time again, promoting it, saying, look at the emotion of Josh Adams. By the way, Josh, slide us 200 for that too, because that was dangerous. You can't have it both ways.
Well, they do. They want their, as they say about cake, they're pro having it and eating it.
Josh, it was one of the great moments of the weekend. Congratulations, mate, on getting back. Not so much getting the win on the weekend, but for fighting that insidious addiction and getting to where you are today, mate. Many more winners in the future, no doubt.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks, boys.
Josh Adams there, it's a great story. Any story, we love a comeback story, but a story especially when something like that, an addiction like that, to overcome the odds and then get back to the top level.
And that's what racing does so well. And the ability to tell those stories is what we're having media wars about, the fact that some people want just a wall-to-wall race after race after race like a poker machine, and others want to see celebrate stories like that, have an opportunity to watch Josh do it, show it in replay, speak to him post-race, speak to his family, his friends, and celebrate the great comeback that he's made.
He's in a small group, but there are some of the greats have battled this problem. Kieran Fallon, one of the greatest riders in British history, the Irishman. He had suspensions for drug taking, time in alcohol rehab. He had punch-ups with jockeys in the weighing room and even knocked one bloke off his horse after a race one day at a row. You know, he's was accused of race fixing. Some of these guys, they go through hell, and the great ones are the ones that come back. Now, not saying Josh Adams is going to get to that level, but he certainly showed loads as a kid, and if he can get that back, he'll have a good career.
Gents, we're running out of time. I quickly wanted to touch on Dominic Byrne. We were going to get him on today, but he's actually in transit. He's flying back from Spain, so hopefully we will get Dom on tomorrow.
Oh, really?
That's what happens when you pick him as well as Dom.
just zooming in from Spain.
Yeah, he's come up with a formula to help out the racing industry with this conundrum in regards to the whip rule and the protest. Now, Rich, I know you're the mathematician amongst us.
Sure.
His formula is 0.1 X over A, with X being the number of illegal whips and A being an apprentice's allowance.
Right.
So an example would be if it is 0.1 times 1 equals 1 whip over equals 0.1 of a length. Right. Is that clear as mud? Anyway, there is a mathematical formula out there. What do you think about it?
So what he's trying to do is taking on the discussion we had last week, saying at the moment we can't quantify that every time the horse has been struck with a whip, what does that actually mean distance-wise? So really the only way that if we actually acknowledge that it does improve the horse, whether it be 1 millimetre or 100 metres, if we acknowledge firstly that it improves the horse, therefore at the moment a dead heat is the only time, Lynchy, where we can reverse the decision.
Yeah.
Because we can't quantify how much they can improve.
And I just don't think we will quantify it, because certain horses react in different ways. Some shrivel up and go slower. When they're hit with a stick, some will maybe go quicker. A lot of jockeys have come in here and told us it doesn't actually do.
But you can't quantify interference in a race exactly either.
No, you can't. However, you do get a you do get an opportunity to use your eye. Mm. Don't ever underestimate your own eye. And if a horse has been stopped in its tracks and then starts again...
It's like the great old Palantino Tavachi project.
Correct.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So how much did that interference, and was he entitled to be in that certain spot, the Tavachi one, and therefore he was in that certain spot, therefore that's a length closer than what he would have been. He's been beaten half a length. They can make a rough assessment. At the moment, we can't make even a rough assessment because we can't quantify the level of improvement by using the whip.
So Dominic Byrne's going to come on tomorrow and explain it. This is a better explanation for those listening. If a 3 kilo claiming apprentice hits the winner 11 times before the 100, which is 6 more than allowed, the formula would then be 0.01 times the 6 extra hits divided by the 3, which is what he claims. That would then equate to a 0.02 length of a margin. Which means if the difference was less than that, it should be upheld.
So he's saying that would equate to about a head in a close finish, and if the margin was greater than that, less than that,
that's right. So if it was a nose, it'd be dismissed.
Yeah. So
wouldn't it just be more simple? If we just said you carry your whips for control of your horses, you can't use them in the last... When you turn into the straight. The straight is where all the focus is on television viewers, and it's where all the anti-racing people jump up and down because they see whips flailing. And there's all these questions about racing social licence that have to come into this as well. And wouldn't it just be simpler and more straightforward? You say, yeah, use them, but once you turn into the straight, and the straights are different at each track, of course, so you can't say use them in the last 100 or 200 or whatever, you can't use it. Would that fly?
Well, it's worth considering. It's worth smarter people than us. I mean, we've already solved two.
We've solved two. We can't. Well, can't
I refuse to give him any more intel.
I got an SMS. The most successful Group 1 jockey/trainer in Australia would have to be Maurice McCartan. Frank McGrath, who is also in the Hall of Fame, would be another to ride and train Group 1 winners. Richo, you're our stats man.
Yes, that's right. Well, Maurice McCartan, 66 Group 1s as a trainer. I don't know how many as a jockey. And what did he say, the other one? Frank McGrath, did he say?
Frank McGrath.
42 as a trainer. So haven't got any of those as jockeys.
As jockeys. Well, what we'll do, we'll follow
now
that
we'll
up.
Do. We'll do research.
Exactly.
Homework.
In fact, you know what we'll do?
Good Lord, homework.
Let's get Matty Stewart to do it. He's our research expert.
He is. That's right.
He's trying to cut one from the herd as we speak.
Oh, don't go there, please. Funnily enough, that's enough time, man. We've run out of time on the verdict today. Hey, Richo, it's been great having you the past couple of weeks.
Thanks for having me,
mate. Look forward to having you back. You're welcome anytime.
I appreciate
you're available.
Your kind words.
Can you just
I'll send the invoice to you.
Yes, personally. Mickey Lynch, can you just take us out with some more of your Rastafarian gold?
Jamaican patois. I come in here into the studio. I haven't had a chance to work out a rap, but I know next time I'll come in on top.
We're out. That's the verdict. Enjoy your day. Stuff.